Hello and welcome to Chips of Chorlton. I am joined by three members of Dutch Uncles. Sorry, that's really off-putting. Three members of Dutch Uncles. Three members of Dutch Uncles who are Andy, Duncan and Robin. And our Christmas special is here. It's our Christmas special, isn't it?
It is our Christmas special.
Christmas special here. And we are joined by Jonathan Higgs from Everything Everything.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Oh, there it is.
And he just picked up one of your beaters, Andy.
It's not my beater, that.
Isn't it? It's not your beater.
It's
fine. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm very good, thank you.
Very good.
Very good, thanks. Yeah.
So, yes, you've been on our podcast, and we were chatting a minute ago, 2019, July 2019, yeah. 2.5 years ago. And since then, in a global pandemic, and you've released two records as well, which is
something of a coincidence.
and in that time, we've managed to not get chips.
Yeah, pretty much.
How the hell have we... thousand apologies.
I seem to remember there weren't chips last time.
No, there were. We had Dixie.
Dixie chicken.
We just had a bit of everything. It was a sumptuous feast.
It was.
And we all paid for it the next day.
Succulent Chinese meal.
Year's gone okay.
It's been a great year.
Yeah.
It's been one of my faves.
One of your faves, yeah.
Next question.
But we've sort of catch up before. You've been just come back from American tour.
Yes. Been in America, West Coast.
Yeah.
And Mexico for the first time.
Wow. How was that?
Amazing.
Was it good? Yeah.
Awesome.
It looked enormous.
Yeah, I saw a picture. Was it festival?
Pretty cray.
The festival
was ridiculous. I was actually nervous for that. I'm not usually.
It kind of
gigs that you'd see like the Strokes playing and stuff like back in like 2006, like, you know, when you first like seeing what bands, like what kind of audiences they get around the world, it's like, holy moly.
It was pretty mental. And obviously festivals, there's always weird stuff that goes on in your ears, but I had like this weird sort of sinus infection for the whole thing. So my ears were already kind of crazy, and like all the high altitude places we went, like Utah, right, sort of made it worse. And then we got to Mexico, finally. I was like, right, maybe I can hear. And then there was loads of awful kind of festival sound things happening as well.
Yeah.
So like we had each other's sound and stuff like that, which is mental when you're a keyboard player and you've got the bass player's sound, for example. So that all happened. Some of us got away with it more than the others, I think, but that was just insane, that feeling of that many people.
Yeah.
So you started off the year, Duncan, you mentioned before about they had that, you know, Reanimator came out, Raw Datafield as well, and you toured early on this year, sort of 50-50-ish, kind of.
It was a tour that was booked to play Reanimator songs, and then it was cancelled, and then it was put forward, and then it was put forward again, and blah, blah, blah. And by the time it came around, it was just before Raw Datafield came out. So we had this weird situation where we had this new album, and we had all these songs we wanted to play, but no one really knew them. And we had this album from 2 years ago that we couldn't really be asked to play live. we had to promote, even though we were like, we really want to play Raw Datafield.
Yeah.
But no one knew what the songs were, so it was a bit of a... We sort of had to straddle the two records, which is annoying.
Watching it from afar, this room, of which I won't name, although the name does slip from time to time in the episodes, if you're paying attention. I was quite perplexed as to how quickly you were releasing singles off Raw Datafield. It felt like about three singles came out in the space of like a month and a half.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I was like, this is a curious strategy of way to go. But then now that we've stepped back into the zone, it's like we're kind of on the exact same trajectory. Yeah. Like, no, this completely makes sense.
Yeah.
You were doing the right thing. But I thought it kind of made because I remember hearing that the Reanimator tour, the amount of Raw Datafield material was going to be limited to pretty much maybe the one or two singles that people had heard and not the...
Yeah.
I mean, it's an absolute banger as well of an album.
Well, thank you.
I'm just going to say that. So it's
I think we still ended up playing like five of them. Only three and two and a half had come out at the time.
But as I say, it felt like, maybe it is gearing more towards that. But then, of course, the artwork for the tour is more Reanimator. So
yeah.
It must have been a very confusing, but at
it
the same
was confusing
time...
because the pandemic just ruined the way things are supposed to work and the rhythm of it all. So in the end, it's just like, here we are. You probably want to hear some of this stuff, you know?
Yeah. Like, I remember like the first DJ set I had back from the pandemic was just at Yes, doing like a day set from like 6 p.m. till midnight, just in the main bar. And I found myself almost in bits. After 2 hours, I was already playing LCD All My Friends. Like, the sun was still up. And I was just doing a DJ set, because like, it had been that long, and I thought that life had genuinely gone. I thought it was genuinely behind me. So I can't... I can only begin to imagine, you know, when you're seeing Academy One. You know, I don't know what the first date was of that tour, but it must have been really quite profound. Was that your proper first... Oh, no, you must have done some shows in 2021.
Well, we did weird stuff. Like, we did bits. Stuff in 2020.
That cricket ground.
But
we did the cricket ground. That was really of course. Weird.
Yeah.
But there was also there was some stuff we tried, because we were trying to promote a record in the pandemic.
You did the VR gig.
We did the VR gig.
Yeah.
Which was insane.
Would you recommend?
In some ways, yeah. But not if you... like music.
I think you can say no if you like people.
Well, that too.
Did you get a chance to like just take view it again?
Yeah, we were in the crowd when everyone was watching it. We were just people. We were just those stupid avatars running around as well.
Right. Okay.
Because the video was shot like several weeks or months prior.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And then that went away to be like put into their 3D world. And then when it came to the night, we were just jumping around like everyone else. Not being able to hear or see the band.
Could you talk?
But you could hear like an Australian person being like, bloody hell, sounds absolutely shy.
Really?
Yeah. Just like really close to you. And then you wander somewhere else and go, I can't see anything, you know, I can't see anything. Yeah, it was pretty bad in general. Like, but it was quite funny and quite fun. And then there was like another like VIP room where we were all just running around, and the people could come and talk to us.
As you would do in any VIP room, just run around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, you can't do that in a real one. In this one, I couldn't really be asked to talk to many people. I'd like answer a couple of questions, but then I would just start running around the periphery and like jumping into this little moat thing, and no one really knew who. Actually, no, I think they did know who we were. I think we looked special in some way, and that was actually kind of annoying because I wanted to look really ridiculous.
Yeah. What was the first big gig back then? What was the one?
I don't really remember. It would have been certainly on that tour. It was weird to be doing it again.
Yeah.
Just generally.
Yeah.
And you feel obviously much more grateful than you used to, and just kind of.
Was there any particular like festival or venue that you were going to revisit that you thought?
Well,
like when we play that again and it's all normal, that's when it's going to feel like it's all come home again.
We've struggled to get festivals since everything fucked up, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's been a... Because it's threw everyone out of...
Sync.
Out of sync. Yeah. Everyone's scrabbling to get the festival spots, and if your album doesn't come out at exactly the right time or doesn't make radio or whatever, you're not there. The competition's too heavy for us now, basically. Mm. So we've been missing out on a lot of the stuff we used to get, which is really annoying.
Is there still like a backlog, probably?
There's a massive backlog, yeah. And there's also still a reluctance to buy tickets to a lot of things, even now, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's still not back to normal at all, really.
You did that with a tour, didn't you? The small venues.
It was called Revive Live. Nice. And the idea was to get people back out after the pandemic into little venues and keep them from going under.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. Although there was a heat wave.
Was that then?
Made it a little tricky because we were playing in like a pub in Shrewsbury upstairs.
40 degrees.
Yeah. And we just had to have all the windows open. We had this, we had these little fans, and we were like, oh, have you got any more fans? And we were like, yeah, I've got something. An hour later, this massive, like industrial sort of military fan turned up that was literally like good meter and a half diameter, and they turned it on and it just went just the stupidest sound.
Yeah.
So we're like, no, we can't really use that, you know, it's a gig. Generally that was an amazing little tour, that it was just so weird to be in all these little places, and people really loved that we were there in their hometown.
Definitely.
We really liked meeting people and just going back to basics in that way, just you know, back to a splitter and back to like not having comfort at any point was actually really good to kind of re-engage, especially after you've not been doing it for so long. And it was like, no, this, remember this,
remember
yeah,
this.
Yeah. It was great.
Yes, how did the recording of Raw Data Field go in lock? Did you do it in lockdown then? I'm just because how was the protocol for that?
Towards the end, it sort of stopped by then,
right?
And we certainly didn't have to like hide it or anything.
I recall us making jokes regarding the temperature gun at the studio that you guys used and that we also used because we were going in there. We were getting tested. It was a bit like, really, at this point, are you sure?
Yeah.
And I was like, I was worryingly close to the threshold every time.
This is the effect the studio is having.
And I was like, John, how do you feel about this? You're like, you just kept temperature gunning the cat.
Yeah, I would do the cat every morning. Yeah. I can't remember his name now, but I call it over, then I get a temperature gun and just do the cat's like face. and that'll be like, write that down in the book.
But
it was done in a really little place that we've used before. You guys have been there before, right, Eve?
You did it with Henry, didn't you, as well?
That's where you did the vocals for this album, wasn't it?
We did all the musical stuff for our album in a nice warm studio in Wales, and then I did all the vocals in a very, very cold studio in Bradbury. It was just very cold. It was just very, very cold.
Recording was done in very quickly. We wrote and recorded super quick.
You always do, though, don't you? You're like the white stripes of math rock. Like, you know, you did like...
The brown stripes.
I remember that being a characteristic of the white stripes. They could make an album in 2 weeks because it's just basically whatever the fuck Jack's been whistling that week. And then tell him Megan just
did. Yeah, pretty much that.
Well, no, but like, you're very quick. Like, you're off... You're
this
like,
was super quick. Know. This really was super quick.
Yeah.
And this was... We would record some things the same day that we wrote them on this one. So that was a bit of a learning curve, especially things like lyrics.
Mm.
You know, write them and then record them.
Now.
And that's it.
Yeah. Done. Yeah.
But I had I could go back, and I did here and there, but I had a big body of stuff that I wanted to put into songs, so it was actually quite easy in the end. And I think we work quite well like that. You can definitely overcook. We are really bad at overcooking stuff.
You can tell that this one wasn't, though, at all.
Yeah. Like, we call it the fucko, and it's like... we have a song, we think it's good, and then Alex will take it away, and then the rest of us, after a little while, we're like, oh, is Alex going to fucko this one? And then it'll come back, and it's like, yeah, it sounds completely different, because he's got bored with this bit, or wants to change that bit. And that's easy to do.
It is, for sure. It's definitely happened with our record as well. A few times as well, when it's been taken back to someone else's, someone's taken the session, and we're like, we're not touching the session. The only person touching it is this person.
Yeah.
And it comes back completely different. Yeah. But it's so hard to get perspective on what might be good additions and what you're just bored of.
Yeah.
You know, that's the really hardest difficult. Bit, really, isn't it?
And it's
easy just endlessly to pile stuff on.
Which we do all the time.
We've done that.
And the only thing we've learned is to take it off.
Yeah.
Afterwards, like, that's been to pile as much shit on, but then to try and take it off.
Same lesson we learn every single time we make a record, and every time we're in a situation like this where people say, what advice would you give? It's always the same one, and it's always take stuff away from your music.
Yeah.
remove.
Yeah, that's much more positive than just saying music's full.
Yeah.
Which is the one thing we always want to say. Like, what would you recommend? Just don't do it. live for the weekend. Yeah. No, make sure you're in a band with people that you could just generally be at the pub with.
Well, yeah.
It's a standard, but it's an easy one to go to. Yeah.
Remove anything you've recorded.
Yeah. Decide that going to the pub's better than being in a band. don't want to be lugging amps around for 6 years before you finally have enough money to pay someone else to do it.
Yeah. Quit now.
So how does it work with like the pool of music, and is there like a huge pile of music and lyrics, and then that gets whittled down, or is it worked on things?
It tends to be me or Alex will write something, a scrap or something a bit more developed, and then fairly quickly it either goes to the top or it goes to the bin.
Yeah.
And so we end up with far less of the kind of, this is a well developed song that no one's into. Because that used to happen.
Yeah.
And now it's like, no one's into it, it's not going to get well developed.
Do you ever go back to those, to that
sometimes,
music?
Sometimes.
Because thinking of just what happened with Poppin, I kind of felt Poppin was, Dutch Uncle's latest single, Poppin. So it kind of wasn't part of the 12 or 10 that was originally going to get done, and then by...
Basically, I wrote lyrics for 10 songs and I refused to write any more. So
that's the good thing, though.
Yeah. I was like, there was enough...
It's like Tarantino.
You're the Tarantino of math rock.
I was like, Tarantino, but what's the fetish? It's not a foot fetish. I'm trying to think what it is.
Chips.
Like Tarantino with the chip fetish, man. There were moments where if an idea still didn't feel like it was ready to be part of that final 10, there was a particular idea of Pete's called At the Wheel, and the lyrics to Poppin' were the original lyrics for At the Wheel. And I thought I gave it as good as I could give it in the demo, but it was like, when it comes to the showdown, I'm going to be absolutely, you know, just naked on stage with this one. It's not going to, you know what I mean? Like, you know it's not going to land.
Right.
I don't know how else to describe that.
Yeah.
You know it's not going to land. So all of a sudden I was like, well, what if we take this other idea of Pete's, put the exact same lyrics on it, pretty much line for line, and just like, you know, just give it a space there. And it was like, yeah, that
and it
fits.
Works.
That, yeah. Yeah. And you know, you could say for one side, well, you're just doing that because it sounds easier, it sounds more familiar. It's like, yeah, I'll take familiar at this point because I've embarrassed myself enough. you got to learn from those moments where you do embarrass, you know, not embarrass, but you got to learn from those moments where you try something and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because you're going to live with these. You live with these moments. Like, you know, the internet's there. Even if another warehouse burns down with all the remaining copies of your album, the internet will always be there to restore these, you know, to keep these things there forever. So, like, you are going to live with the... And as an artist, as a band, as musicians, you have to be able to sort of live. You're going to have to live with what you make.
That's true, yeah. Is there anything that you play or is popular... that you really don't like?
I wouldn't go as far as to say I don't like, but there's definitely...
Or don't enjoy...
You're bored of...
It's legacy or playing it
live.
No,
I think the thing that happens is that sometimes I have something that I think is really good and the other guys don't.
Yeah.
And no one ever hears it.
Yeah.
That's actually the thing that gets to me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say stuff has gone on records that I don't like.
That's what solo albums are for, though.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Bits and pieces here where I'm like, I don't really care either way, but I think it's probably good.
Yeah.
And the process has probably made it, so, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
All the voices have said, this is good.
Come exactly. Like, yeah. But sometimes I'll have something and no one, and everyone's just like,
Yeah.
And no one ever hears it. And I'm just like, no, that's the fucking thing. Yeah. That's the one.
That was the one. That was the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Rob, you've got 100.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
But it's weird, like, they, especially ones from even longer ago, it's like, you don't even know what to do with them, you know, but they are like kind of...
But it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially ones that had vocals on, that Duncan added vocals on.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always obsessed with bands like that, because some bands, I can't even remember the top of my head apart from Radiohead, where they've worked on songs for a decade.
Mm.
Was it one of them Rainbows? Was it Nude?
Yep.
It was on the OK Computer Sessions, wasn't it? And they just didn't give up on it. And I think, like, we just fucked it off years ago. But they essentially just kept working on it.
Well, I think we've gone through processes where it's like, if I bring an idea to the table and Duncan writes lyrics, like, the next day, that's a really good sign.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sign that we're on something quite positive.
Mm-hmm. Too good a sign, frankly.
Yeah. and if there's something that's just not quite clicking and we kind of labour over it, it's like, this isn't working, we have laboured over songs and they have made the cut before, but we don't play those songs, you know,
say they make the cut. they obligate a contractual
they fulfill 10 tracks
contract agreement. There is when the extra CD comes out for
yeah, we need
what's
to make
our
that
album
first.
Called again? Yeah. Whenever we can be asked to get around to make that CD.
False entertainment.
Yeah, false entertainment.
Not entertaining.
Are you not entertained? we were talking about this. The name of the Losing Steam EP. Too Big to Fail EP. True Entertainment 2. Too Big to Fail. but Too Fast, Too Furious. Too
right,
Big,
right.
Too Fail.
Yeah, yeah, it's a peep show. Right. I don't think you know what that means.
Have you guys talked much about the new era?
What's the new era?
The blonde era. Well, you're back.
You're back.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, we've not... This is only like, how many episodes have we done since like we properly came, like since the Mercury
fifth,
special?
The fifth, something like that. What? We split the Pete Marshall one in two, didn't we?
That's
one. So yeah.
And we did two other.
Mercuries
as well.
Did a Mercury one and a couple of little ones. So yeah, call it four or five. Yeah, this is the fifth probably. Yeah. But yeah, just get back in the swing of things, aren't we? I suppose.
Yeah, I think we're just.
Yeah, but you're back as a band.
Yeah, that's much
more significant.
Yeah.
Why did that happen?
I don't know why that happened. Like what? Why weren't you a band, and why are you a band now?
I was sitting on the pot. Sitting on the pot a couple of days ago, where I start all my finest work, and it did occur to me that definitely made a massive error in not making a sixth album in the same rhythm as, you know, after Big Balloon. Because after Big Balloon, it was just the case
7-8.
What?
Yeah. Oh, there he is.
Sorry, I crashed you.
Oh, I just got it. Nice.
I'm trying to be real here.
Sorry, I know. Excuse me.
With my people. It occurred to me, we made a massive error there to not actually crack on and make another album. But then that being said, we didn't stop trying ideas. I think we just felt very disillusioned about... Well, I certainly felt very disillusioned about what was next for what we were doing.
I think we kind of decided that had we just released another album 2 years later, it would have been a very similar campaign.
Cut off by COVID.
Potentially, yeah. But just, I think...
Maybe finished just before it. Yeah. Maybe.
I think, you know, the fact that we'd done 5 albums in less than 10 years and there'd been... Yeah. A year gap between each one, you know, it's like if we'd done that again, then people might get bored. So I think it would be good to give a little bit more of a gap. I didn't think it would be this long, but I think it's probably for the better that it has been. You know?
I think it's only really been this long because of the backlog of everything else.
So did you always plan to return around this time?
No, sooner, I think. I don't know. Was it sooner?
We didn't really speak about it.
We don't really speak about it.
This is the thing we were talking before about, like, song ideas that get sort of thrown on the pile that you might revisit at some point. There's a bunch of ideas that you did write for that sort of, like, same rhythm of campaign release.
We embraced a bit of UKG.
I don't know what that is. Sorry.
Garage.
Oh, garage.
Right, God. Yeah. The name for it was just so hideously outdated that I couldn't couldn't switch my brain back far enough.
Forwards. Right, sorry. UK Garage.
Okay. I mean, that's roughly cool again, I think, actually.
I think it is. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's where there's like a sort of like, you know, pile of good ideas there that...
Yeah, we made songs, didn't we?
Yeah. That's the thing about sort of writing ideas and demos and stuff. It's all about timing. Mm. If you write something and it's not the right time for the band to do anything again, it's less likely to be worked on, fully developed. But, I mean, these songs are again, just timing really, aren't they? I think it was like... There's a song on the album called Damascenes, maybe, that sort of caught my ear and was like, oh, yeah, well, this is like... You know, I could see this being good. There's quite a lot of stuff in between that as well.
There is.
We could probably revisit.
And to be fair, like when we started writing properly for this album, we did put all the demos we'd worked on in a Dropbox and just like, are any of these good enough to work on further? But I think we just wanted to do fresh things and just kind of start afresh.
What we were saying before, that fresh things always win.
Yeah.
They do. Mm. Yeah.
Because they're exciting. Yeah,
yeah. Or especially for the significant chunks of the album. And then when you realise, we just need another inch. Whack out the old idea from 2011. Go on. I think that was definitely the cycle of it all.
Yeah.
You said you have done that, but the radio thing we were saying before, like dredging up a song from 1997 and putting it on your record, it's crazy, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah.
It's not like you said, anything fresh will always win. I just could never be excited about working on something that old. And also as well, it's probably the same. Like once something's labeled shit, that's it. Like is there anything?
We have a really bad problem in almost immediately we'll give songs, we will liken them to awful things. So a big favourite of Alex is that he'll say it sounds like the Saw Doctors or Spin Doctors. I can never remember which.
The Spin Doctors.
I think it's the Spin Doctors. Yeah.
When you said Saw Doctors, I was just thinking of Doctors, the TV show. It's like, yeah. Ooh.
What was their hit, the Spin Doctors?
If you want to buy me flowers, just go ahead. Isn't it?
Was that Two Princes?
That's Two Princes.
Yeah, by them.
That's the Spin Doctors.
Sorry,
yeah.
That's one of those songs where I get the band name and the song title like swapped around. It's Two Princes. It's called Spin Doctors, but that's you're right. Sorry.
Yeah. And so basically anything with like a funky beat, shall we say, instantly gets called back, like, whether you like it or not.
Dive it inside every time he says it. Yeah.
But there's, I mean, it's the depths that we will go to describe our own music in unflattering terms is quite amazing.
In the interest of describing music in interesting terms, and this is an end of year review, what did you make of the Mercuries? What did you make of the...
I completely ignored them and I don't really know what happened.
Very good.
Because my album wasn't there.
You should be a politician. I was surprised that Raw Datafield didn't get
a sniff anywhere, pal. Yeah. No one noticed it happened.
No one on the board.
No end of year polls. No nothing.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't happen.
A single thing.
Didn't happen.
I saw the Pitchfork review. Well, I saw the score.
Was it good? Was it bad?
Oh, it's terrible.
I'm not trying to
gazump him here. Like you had it here first.
Got your journalism.
Well, no, no.
I think I probably did know that at one point, and I've just genuinely have not thought about it since. You could tell me it was anything right now. Yeah, I'd say, oh, it was it?
No. Like, you know, Pitchfork reviews.
They fucked us on our first record.
Yeah, on your first one and on this one.
3.7.
Yeah, you this one's first record and 4.8. This one.
It ruined our chances in America. Full stop. Yeah, pretty much. I think that was a big, a large guard at the gate.
Yeah.
Of our success in America.
Is or it lack still, of. It goes to show you how
the
small
Pitchfork just went, no, these guys are absolutely shit. Don't bother.
Just one person says that.
Yeah.
You know,
that album
thing,
got like nines and tens. Across the board.
Yeah.
And Pitchfork, no, this is a 3.7
so
out of 10.
Yeah, the general Metacritic for Man Alive is like ridiculously high.
Yeah.
And all the reviews that are like, when I was, you know, I was giving it a glance before, all the reviews that are there, it's like, yeah, it's glittering, 3.8.
Yeah,
like everything's
we never
there.
Really knew
so
why
weird.
That happened.
So weird.
What can you do? Yeah. I know it's a cliche, but I don't actually read reviews. Because it's either flattery or. You get pissed off.
But
I don't think it's very good for me.
Because
to be honest, I don't.
Yeah, it's fishing about golf in the end, isn't it?
I don't really care. Even if someone says I'm fucking amazing, I don't think one person's opinion is that important.
No.
You know, or it's not more important than the next man's or woman's.
Yeah.
What, you know, when a fan says they like our record, yes, that's great. When they say they don't, I'm like, okay. that's great too. I made this thing. I have my own thoughts on it. Yeah. Sometimes people will say this is the best thing I've ever fucking heard.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking it sucks. You know, and you can tell me a million times that it's the best thing you've ever heard, and I won't ever believe you. Vice versa.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm sometimes quite alarmed. Usually when I'm thinking about it on the pot.
I should mention that the only time we ever charted in the top 40. Was a song I wrote on the toilet.
Really? Yeah. What song was that?
Cough Cough.
Oh,
you wrote that on the toilet.
The main hook, yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah, it's because I was literally, I coughed in that rhythm. No, maybe she did. My ex-girlfriend.
There was an audience.
She was shouting something to me, and I went, or maybe she went, And I went, wait a minute, or wait a second. And I thought, fuck, that's a really good rhythm. Like, dun, 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 dun. Wait a second. And that was literally because I was shouting on the bog. And I got on my phone, or maybe I just ran next door and started making the demo, you know.
Yeah. They were back on the bog.
I mean, there was a little delay.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly cruel namaste. Yeah.
But it was literally that that rhythm occurred in reality
yeah.
with those words. I was like, ooh, that was quite good, actually. And that's literally the only record of ours that ever got in the charts. And it's I Was on the Ball.
It's pretty great that we had that switched on to notice it, though. Like,
well, you know, a creative mind never switches off.
Once you're on, you're never off.
Yeah. When you're on the pot, yeah. You know, Louis Armstrong used to smoke a joint in the morning on the toilet and leave it all behind. I think about that quite a lot.
I realised when I was, probably when I was at the pot, I realised that I've got quite a high number of friends who actively don't like the band. But they're not bad friends, you know, but like, you know, when, so, you know, when yeah. someone's honest with you, goes, yeah, you know, it's not my cup of tea, it's like, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And we can still be, yeah, we can still maintain a friendship through this. This is all good. Like, you know, let's not talk about that, but let's just talk about other things that, you know, you kind of develop yeah, something. I mean, and then
just,
and then at times, you can.
It's fucking rude.
No, it's not. No, it's no.
Just say nothing.
Well, no, because, well, yeah, no, you're right, but at the same time, no, like, and this is over years, by the way. A lot of those people, like, and it's not many, but, like, you know, it's a few. Those people have actually, you know, when like, you know, we've taken, like, the next step up and a thing, they'll be like, hey, by the way, that's really good. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a genuine...
It's really good. It's still not for me.
Yeah. But it's like, no, but you see their taste change and they, you know, like, you shouldn't... You can't live your life being, well, I'm me, and if you don't like everything I touch,
exactly.
you know, you can't live like that. But at the same time, when you don't live like that, you can sometimes wonder whether you are culturally cooking yourself.
Yeah, you don't want to be in that kind of echo chamber.
You shouldn't be at all.
We've had a few, like, well, quite a lot, like 5 or 6 out of 10 reviews. And often we think it'd be better to be absolutely slated.
Yeah,
than just have this sort of middling.
I do like
nothing.
A 2-star.
Yeah. You'd prefer to be curiously bad.
Exactly.
Than just, out of 10. Than just absolute bathwater.
Yeah, 5 is.
Yeah.
Because I was, that Man Alive review, I thought might have done. I remember at the time thinking it might have done that, just intrigued people. Especially reading it as well, thinking, well.
I mean, I definitely have looked up the lowest ever reviews on Pitchfork before. And, like, you know, and they do that with films and stuff.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. It must be a comical 0.0 there, or 0.1.
Yeah, there's the one, I don't know if it's Pitchfork, but there's definitely a famous review, which is just a video of a monkey pissing in its own mouth. I can't remember who that's for. I think it might be Fieldy's Dreams.
We did get a 3-word review from Vice magazine.
Oh, yeah?
For a single, for Fragrant, and it was just pointless indie music.
Right.
That was it. It was like that.
Right.
That's
to the point.
To the point. At least they didn't, you know, dance around it.
Whenever something gets a bad review on Pitchfork, people quite often link it back to when they reviewed the Peppa Pig album and gave that like 6.4.
Mm.
It's like, surely this is better than the Peppa Pig album. And to be honest, I've listened to the Peppa Pig album because I've got a 3-year-old daughter and it's fucking shit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hold it against Pitchfork per se, and
I don't really have an opinion on that, I don't kind of think they're just stuck up
or whatever. I don't really care, the only reason why
Pitchfork has ever even sort of considered to perhaps be on a different plane is just purely out of the different scoring system. If it's just whole numbers, it would be the exact same as every other review. The fact that it's like 1 point something.
I mean, it just makes it.
They've put as much thought
into
marking your album as you did into making it.
Basically. it's just that projected nuance of.
It was nominated for Mercury. You think it's shit. What am I supposed to make of it? I'm not going to try to think about you.
Yeah.
Really, I don't actually give a fuck.
From a punter's point of view, that sounds like an interesting album. Though.
Yeah, it does actually.
Yeah. Well, the only other musical event of the year I can feel worthy of bringing up in conversation, I'm sure it'll be just as brief, was, did you watch any of Glastonbury this year?
Yeah, I watched a bit. I watched Macca and... who else was on?
Kendrick?
No.
Billy Eilish?
No.
We're of an age, you gotta make sure it's not Billy Piper.
No. I watched Billy Piper. I didn't watch either of those. I just saw some stuff that was on, but I can't.
I watched The Friday a lot, and then I didn't watch the rest of it.
for some reason. Mm. I don't know why. I felt like the lineup on the Friday, and it was like a novelty, wasn't it? Because the BBC were doing all the stages, weren't they?
It was first time back properly.
I was like, oh, it's great. And then I didn't watch the Saturday or Sunday. So
I was in France for the whole thing.
Oh, I came back.
You know, just have a nice holiday. Came back and. It's just like, it's a bit weird to kind of watch it back when it's not live. Yeah. It's like, yes. I put on the Kendrick set. It's like, it's really good,
yeah.
But I couldn't sit there and watch an hour and a half of it in my living room. I would have liked to have been there, obviously, but it's just...
Yeah, there's a massive FOMO sort of feeling you get with Glastonbury when you have played it, you know.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
And you could... maybe should be playing it this year. It's like, no, you can watch this show like everyone else.
Gotta say, I was really quite surprised to not see you on that lineup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you not feel like taking the hit on it? Like, you know,
what do you mean?
Free? I don't know.
Oh, you always play for free, don't you?
You play for free at your level?
I thought
that was just something that happens at our level.
Oh, I can't remember. People say different things. People say that the headliners get it, play for free. I don't know. I guess we probably do get paid for it, but I don't think very much.
You just kind of just think about the fact that you can stay there for the weekend.
If it was the type of thing that you could just pay for and do, we'd fucking do it. Because it's unbelievable exposure.
There's a little bandstand, isn't there? You know.
Well, we do that.
Yeah.
I mean, for what it's worth, just to clarify, always going to play it for free.
Of course.
Just for the record, not debating that at all, because I think you ask anyone, would you do it for free?
It's an amazing experience.
Your fans will find you. It was great. But the time we played it, full tent, you know, couldn't knock it at all.
Yeah.
The only thing that was a shame was we had to leave early to do another gig in order to pay for it.
So we
didn't get to see the whole the whole show out.
Yeah.
And found ourselves in a Pizza Express in Hull very quickly. I was like, this is a Glastonbury.
By the Saturday, that was the weird thing.
On Saturday, we left Friday night.
Yeah, after Radiohead.
Straight after Radiohead. So we just did the Thursday, Friday, didn't we? When we did it. But
that was a fucking wreck on Sunday.
Jeez. Hell of a Thursday, Friday. It was great.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That crow's nest moment. Steve Davis DJing some Reich. To no one. No one was in there, but my God, it was a vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think, you know, it was a bit of a come down playing Hull on the Saturday. It wasn't a bad gig, but
it was a bad gig. I think it was a bad gig it was one of those bad gigs where you don't expect it to be a bad gig, in the sense that it's like, well, the people are here, the production's here, it's all quite good. Why are we absolutely bombing? and the sun was in our eyes.
Could it be that the children are wrong?
I remember that, like, because it was in that outdoor space, Zebedee's Yard.
Great spot, wasn't it?
Supporting Flaming Lips.
Yeah.
Supporting Flaming Lips, public service broadcasting with the main support. So we were like first on, or maybe second on?
First out of three.
Yeah. Okay,
no shits were given about us.
Obviously no shits given about us. And what I hated most about that gig was because the sun was dead in our eyes. Personally. And obviously we felt like shit anyway. But because the sun was dead in our eyes, we had to have glasses on as a practicality. And I was just throughout my head going, oh God, such a cliche in this moment. Never worn sunglasses on stage at any point in 15 years until now.
And it just
happened to be that moment you go, we were at Glastonbury yesterday. It's like, fuck me. How's this moment capitulated like this?
It was also weird because it was the second time we supported Flame Lips. We supported them a couple of years before.
Yeah.
And it just feels like whenever we play to their crowd, they're always just like, oh, these guys are a bit weird, aren't they?
I know. We keep showing up like a bad penny. Yeah. we're the weird ones? Yeah, wait a minute.
I think we did speak to, or Pete spoke to like Wayne Coyne, didn't he?
He
was a bit like...
He was not impressed.
It's a bit weird, lads.
I tell you now, I bet you I can make friends with Wayne Coyne. Like, he'd be like, he wouldn't be into it, be like, oh, it's okay, let's talk about some other things for a bit. And in 3 years' time, I get a text from Wayne going, hey, that's single, it's all right. Yeah. So Glastonbury, that was...
Not bothered. It's difficult to talk to me about music because I ignore a lot of it. Yeah. Unless it really speaks to me, or
why is that though?
I guess it's a mixture of jealousy and
Well, that's always true, isn't it? If any musician is honest about it.
It is, yeah.
Watching something that you want to do that you're not doing is...
Yeah, I don't see the point in pretending. I do feel jealous of bands that do better than I do.
Of course.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when I think they're shit. That's the problem. when they're really good, I'm like, well, of course. Of course they should do well.
Yeah.
When they're really popular and I think, well, it, you know, they put some work into it. It's not really my thing. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Don't force me to listen to it. But there's a lot of occasions where they're just shit.
Yeah.
And you just think, why the fuck has this succeeded where I haven't? And I'm not going to deny that's how I feel.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
What. Yeah.
That's, and you can never analyze that, though, either.
No,
you
it's
never
just get simple, an answer.
It's like a natural, honest.
Yeah, I'm like, I've made something that I think's fucking awesome. And it seems that some other people think it is too. Why has this terrible thing? But you know, there's so many factors. There's timing, and there's a million things that go into it. And luck is the biggest one of all. And we've been incredibly lucky.
Yeah.
You guys have been lucky.
Yeah,
you
know, with doing this.
And yet, when someone says, "Oh, have you listened to The Car by the Arctic Monkeys?" I'm like, "No, I fucking haven't." And I never will. Even though, you know, they don't even encroach on the type of music I make. They're a completely different kind of band.
Yeah.
Everyone says they're quite good. I even agree that they are quite good. However, I've got a particular, barrier when it comes to certain bands that do extremely well, and I can't quite understand why.
Yeah.
It just sort of means that I can't give myself to them either.
Yeah.
Give myself to them. I like that.
Yeah, that's what happens when you really like something. You give yourself to it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you get all these things that are trying to get a piece of you, and you only give it to a few. I think that's how I feel about the things I really like. I'm like, go on then. You can go on then.
Yeah,
I'll get really into this.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to.
I definitely feel the same way and find it difficult to understand people who listen to a lot of music very often.
Mm.
And it's like, if you just, it's sort of like, it's a bit like podcasts now. It's sort of a bit, sort of replace that a bit, like people who listen to loads and loads of podcasts, one after another. It's the sort of same, like you don't remember anything about that podcast.
Yeah.
In the same way that people listen to, album after album. After, like, there's no way you can truly appreciate what you've just listened to if you just listen to 10 albums a day.
Yeah,
and I'm the same as well. Like, I get into one album and I have it on repeat for a month.
Sorry,
go on.
No, go on, you go.
You get these people that are music fans, and in the past I would have called myself one, and obviously I am, but there are people who just listen to music all day.
Yeah.
And they listen to loads of music, different music, and really good music, and really varied music.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the hell's going on in your brain?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, if I listen to something really, really good, I can't really listen to anything else for a bit, you know.
For sure,
and as soon as I hear something that is cliched or I'm expecting, you know, something that I can predict what's about to happen, my mind just completely switches off.
Yeah.
So when was
but
the
it's
last...
definitely not a good trait.
When was the last time?
No, I don't think so either.
You got into a new band then. What was the last new band that...
Oh, I really like this band called Mama, who are extremely cliche sort of grunge band from New York.
But what is it about it then?
It's partly because my girlfriend plays it all the time and it sort of seeps in that way. But it's just sometimes you get... Well, there's lots of different ways of connecting to music, isn't there? But there's like a... sort of naivety and a cool thing going on that I just really like. That they've tapped into the attitude of the music that they're somewhat aping,
like in within their performance.
Yeah, with everything, with the writing, with the performance, with the sounds and everything. And you'll get, because it is, you know, very reminiscent of early 90s grungy bands.
For some reason, I'm thinking of something like L7, Pretend We're Dead. Yeah, we pretend that we're dead. Kind of like, you know, the sort of...
It sounds like the Breeders.
Yeah, that kind of cross. Like just a little heavier than the Breeders, perhaps, or I don't know. My Breeders knowledge is criminally small.
Mine is approximately one song.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think mine might be too.
And it sounds a bit like
that. Yeah, it sounds a bit like that thing. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's not. I don't know. I don't think musicians are really ever the right people to ask about music.
Yeah, no,
right.
It's amazing. I always have the same stock answers, like, the Beatles, Radiohead. And I listen to the same old things, or I occasionally let one band in, like two or three a year.
Yeah.
And everyone asks, what do you like? And it's like, I'm still listening to SPQR, even though they've changed their name now. and it's like, yeah, I still like those guys from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Or I like this one band from America. Or
when
I like
you say those guys from Liverpool, you mean the Beatles.
Yeah.
So did your Spotify Unwrapped
Oh, it was
give
all
you any...
me because we tried to stream our own record.
Sure.
It was literally, I mean, I can show you it. It was all me. And then
you got to do 10 plays, haven't you, to make it count for one?
100.
100 plays to count for one sale.
I heard it was 15.
Oh,
how have we all got radically
1500.
Different?
1500.
That's when I stopped. You mean separate songs?
Or like 1500 songs to count for one album purchase?
That's so many different things.
I thought it was like 100 streams of an album was one sale.
Regardless, there's a lot of information that is contradictory out there.
Okay, yeah.
And it's all futile because
did you know what to do the cassettes with
human hours in your life to get one
to
play
that, yeah.
Especially not in release week. So anyway, that completely screwed my Wrapped.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I think I had Stephen Duffy or something was number 6 or something like that.
Right.
Which is just like a song from the '80s that
Kiss
I DJ
me.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Good song.
Alexander O'Neill, Criticize again. just sort of 80s DJing.
If you're talking about Wrapped, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass, but my top 5 songs were the first 4 songs from Raw Data Feel,
and then
a Dutch Uncle song. I have no idea why.
Washed up.
I think there was a point in lockdown where I thought I should really try and remember how to play the drums. So I think I probably just played along to that one song over and over again.
I mean, if Spotify was to take a monthly Unwrapped of mine right now, it'd probably just be most of the songs that I've forgotten the lyrics to of ours, which is pretty much all of them. Yeah. Like, you laugh at the oldies for having the screens on stage, but it happens to you, and it's quite scary. Not in the same way, obviously, you know. On the night, I'll be ready.
Yeah.
But,
Well, when we did that Snow Patrol tour years ago, he had loads of lyrics on the... He had a fake
monitor
and had a little screen that scrolled the lyrics.
I remember...
For surprisingly popular songs, actually.
I remember hearing about the makings of their albums where, like, they'd always have, like, 40 songs to pick from for an album. I'm just like, God, that must be terrible.
The 30 that didn't make the cut must have been so bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, that's not to say that they're objective. Yeah, they're not... Yeah. It's just an opinion.
Oh yeah.
Hey, I've got Final Straw on CD. I thought it was a really good balance in that. I don't know why, but you know, it's still there.
That was the final straw.
And that was the final straw. Like, yep. Yeah, very good, very good. Snow Patrol, they have their moments and stuff. But like, yeah, when someone says, "Oh yeah, well, we had 40 songs, we were just trying to whittle it down to 10," it's like, really? Like, I'm never sure about that. Please don't say you had like 60.
No, we didn't. We were writing, you know, to fill what we needed. There wasn't much left over.
Okay.
When we did the most recent record, whatever that's called. But in the past, no, when we've done something that's... We've worked up, but it hasn't made the record. We've done these, like, after the record EPs, and we put out like 4 at once or 2 at once or whatever.
Mm.
As like a little... kicker.
Too big to fail EPs.
Yeah, too big to... Well, it's more realistically, the other guys don't like this one EP.
Yeah.
But I've managed to get it out.
Too hot for EP.
Yeah. Too good for the record, was it, guys?
Yeah.